right, welcome to Swedish Junior Hockey Podcast. Jacob Dahlin, your host. Today we have a different kind of coach, a life coach, Corey Syke from Notre Dame Hounds in the Saskatchewan Junior League. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
This episode is brought to you by Scandlux, your home for Scandinavian luxury products for the U.S. market. You can find us at scandlux.com.
Yeah, thanks. So we always have this segment of geography on here, because the way we started this was mainly for the American or North American audience. But what ended up happening is half the people are Swedish. They're listening. So there's a, and then if you look at the stats, there's a lot of people from all over the world actually that are listening to this, which is interesting. Where are you today?
I'm way up in Canada.
Which we can tell on your accent.
They say I have one. I don't know. I don't hear it, but yeah, I'm up in Canada and I'm in Saskatchewan, just south of Regina.
Okay. And in where's my notes here? So Notre Dame is actually in what city or what town?
It's called Wilcox.
Wilcox. All right. So for the Swedish audience, Canada is north of US. No, I'm just kidding. So, right. but I do think, so this is how my brain works with Canada. I always think of the provinces from left to right or west to east.
Right.
It's easier. So yes. For those who don't know Saskatchewan,
yeah.
British Columbia is on the west, where yeah. Vancouver and on the west coast.
Yeah.
Then you have Alberta, right?
Yeah.
And then you got Saskatchewan.
That's right.
And it borders the U.S. with North Dakota and what's the other state?
I don't know my state so good.
Montana.
Yes. Yes.
So from a, so I have a, you're actually the second Saskatchewan person on this podcast.
Nice.
One we have a common connection with, but one we don't. But early on we had Steve McIntyre on, which I consider a personal friend. He used to live here in North Carolina when he played, and he was a firefighter here, but he played, he was the one of the, how would you describe, so Big Mac, 6'6", 240, big fighter in the NHL,
wow.
He's from Brock, Saskatchewan, which is 4 hours northwest of Regina.
Okay.
But the common connection is Dion Antonsen, who was assistant coach in Notre Dame Hounds junior team.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe coached your son there.
Yes, yeah.
And he was on recently. Since he's the head coach of Boden J20 in way up north in Sweden. So
yeah, we were sad to lose him, but we were pretty excited for his opportunity. So
yeah. So what are we going to talk about today? So you're let's give an introduction of you are you're a life coach by trade, but you are also on the staff with Notre Dame Hounds. So we're going to talk about what does it mean to be a life coach, but
sure.
And specifically for coaching and for coaching young hockey players. But I really think it would be fun to talk about this subject of what does it mean to be a life coach? What are the problems that you typically see? And one of the things that I found was that it's not common for teams necessarily, junior teams specifically, to yeah. have to have a life coach or similar. Maybe we yeah. can also then talk about how some deal with it. What do you think about yeah. that?
Sure, that sounds great.
And if you want to normally do this at the end, but since I told you offline, I said, well, what I have open here on my second screen is your website, which is help me out here. I've got too many screens on here, but it's queromea.ca.
Yeah. Good job. Yeah.
And then I have your book open here, actually on Amazon, Umbilicus. So which a process of being self-centered. So I want to talk about that subject actually. And
Sure.
so
Yeah.
I have some keywords written down here that kind of came to my mind when we're looking at being self-centered. And then I have Notre Dame's page up here and your LinkedIn. So I got several pages in here. So,
Nice.
but let's get started because you're not on Elite Prospects. You're not a formal player.
Right. Yeah.
So what makes you, well, first of all, what is a life coach? Let's start there. I'm sure you've gotten that question millions of times.
Yeah. And there's a lot of different answers on what a life coach is. We are, I'd like to say, a step below the psychotherapy field. I say below because I want to give them respect for all of the scientific research and ongoing studies that goes behind being a psychotherapist. And the way I explain it to my clients is that when we get into trouble or when we get stuck, sometimes we need somebody to process that with, and that person needs to be skilled in understanding how things work. But then we have sometimes we get stuck and we need the assistance of science. Now, of course, some of the science bleeds down into our like every coach has their favorite tickle trunk full of toys that they use for each client or each focus that they want to work on. But sometimes we need to level up and we need to go into the psychotherapy scientific research and support systems that can further the progress of the client. So knowing that boundary is really tricky, but as long as the life coach gives honor to the science that's available, that we aren't just winging it and trying to handle abnormal psychology, but at the same time we're more on the ground level of seeing the clients day to day. That's especially how I've designed my practice, is that I'm a ground zero kind of coach. And so we try and figure it out together. And then when we need to upgrade into scientific support, then we'll go and say if we need trauma therapy or if we need CBT or whatever, like we move up into modalities with somebody who's an expert in that field.
So a pretty current, so when we're recording this, we're end of January and this will be recorded, this will be released probably early March, right? But right now, so just so I don't date myself, but recently we have it's getting more and more, this subject about mental health
Yeah,
is
yeah.
now talked about all the time in public versus it used to be kind of,
Yeah.
a bad word. But Patrick Laine, who's from Finland, who just entered into the NHL, I can't remember what the actual term that they use, but it's really the has voluntarily entered into a, typically it's dealing with substance abuse,
Okay.
but it's really dealing with, we're entering in, I need help from a mental health. And I think he released a statement, right?
Okay.
But I think it's getting more and more common about being public of, hey,
Yeah.
I'm not feeling well and
Yeah.
I need external help. And I need, I think he released on his, he's stepping away from the game, which means that he is not on the active roster, which could be a short period of time or could be longer. But he's saying, hey, I need help and I need help from someone from the outside. But what's when I say kind of that's now becoming a little bit more acceptable versus 10 years ago, which no one ever would talk about mental health. Is it getting more and more, is it getting more accepted or is it still kind of?
Oh no, 100%. It's really exciting because it is becoming so normalized in lighter conversations. The idea is still there that therapy is, I call it ultimatum therapy. So I have to go on stress leave. I'm getting a divorce. Something really traumatic has happened in my life.
PTSD or
Yeah. Yeah.
crisis
So,
management or.
right. And so, but what's happening now is that words like anxiety and depression are becoming like, who doesn't have it?
Yeah.
We're all self-diagnosing. We're all kind of going through, and it doesn't take long on Instagram to see all of the information that you would ever need to be a psychotherapist, apparently. so that there's that's fantastic, but there's also the dangers of that too, right? Where we can over normalize, oh, I've got anxiety, oh, I've got OCD, oh, I've got like all of these things. It's like, okay, that's really good to have those kind of labels to put on yourself. And to normalize that it's okay if you have it. But a lot of times as long as we like knowing it is half the battle, and so that's the half that we only need to do, we don't necessarily follow through and get into the work of where that's coming from and how we're handling it. And so then that's where coaches come in. And in my opinion, like somebody else would have a different explanation for this, but and the way I've done my practice is it's very casual. So we can go into what does anxiety feel like to you? I don't care what Instagram says. I don't care what the DSM-5 says. I want to know what anxiety feels like for you. You walk me through this. What does grieving feel like for you? I know the steps, but what does it feel like for you? And how are you processing this in your life in a way that's important to you and works for you? And there's so many complications, just goes right into that person. So spending that, like I said, ground zero time of processing, then they can pop up and say, okay, now I can go talk to a psychotherapist. Now I can talk to a psychiatrist. Now I can talk to my doctor. Now I can go and reach out to my religious leaders. Whatever it is that they feel that they can tap into their resources, they have that confidence behind them to say, hey, not just like flailing help, but productive help, that this is what I need to come in with, and this is how I need to like face issues that I think are lurking.
Yeah. So let's address this issue of, so the process. I'm actually the reason how I found you wasn't actually through Dion, but it was actually through, I'm looking at, as a dad, I am looking at, and I'm helping my son with creating, looking at options for the fall, right? So he's coming back playing juniors in North America this fall. So we're looking at all the junior, trying to get educated on the, here in the US, it's easy. You got tier one USHL, you got tier two North American Hockey League. Canada, much different. And especially today when things are changing every day. But so I'm looking at all the different junior teams and websites, and it's really fascinating. And there's a huge difference in the staff composition between different teams in juniors in Canada. So let's forget about major juniors in the OHL, WHL, and the Q. But if we're looking at Junior A and the Tier 2 system in Canada, I would say that your position, at least on websites, is pretty rare. Of being a life coach for a team and of being an official part of the staff is pretty rare, right?
Yeah, from what I've seen,
Yeah.
it seems pretty rare.
And it's new for Notre Dame, let's be honest. All right.
Yeah,
Yeah,
this
it's
is
not
their
like
first
they've been
year.
doing this for 10 years,
Right,
right?
right.
And it's interesting. I'd like to get, I heard your story before about how you ended up there because your son played there and so on. We'll talk about
Yeah.
that soon, but what's the problem? So if not a lot of teams are having a life coach,
Yeah.
which is common, who is typically within a staff? So if we take a typical junior team, who has to be the life coach if you don't have someone from on the staff that is, that's what their main duty is?
Right.
So it would be, I mean, who shoulders that? Is it the head coach? Is it the assistant coach? Is it the trainer?
I think yes, and no one. Like
And what's the problem with
the
that?
great question.
Yeah, and what's the problem with that?
Well, I think what happens is that A, there isn't support for the supporters, and anybody who's in the mental health field, we all know we need support because the tools that we need coming in order to do support efficiently is a lot of work. And so we need that support. But to put anybody in that position, so say it's the personal trainer, say it's the captain, say it's the assistant captain, say it's the coach, say it's the assistant coach, they already all have big jobs. And we're underestimating the need for it, and not in a negative way. And this is, I think, important to consider also, is that it's not like, I mean, of course, bad things are happening. We all know that, but it's not like there's a big problem. But in the pursuit of excellence, why not pursue excellence?
Yes. And
Why
that's
not deepen the resources and facilitate what the producers, which is the kids, what they need in order to produce well? We've got all the amino acids and creatine and lecithin and the protein and all the things.
yes.
But when it comes to, hey, are you okay? It really falls on the parents. That doesn't mean all the parents are doing a good job.
Well, I mean, I think that especially I don't know how it is everywhere, but I would imagine that there's a lot of traditionalism in place, right? That
Right.
is, look, I've been doing this for 30 years. We don't need this. What we need to be focusing on is just, I mean, mental toughness to me is
Being mentally tough.
be yeah, and survival of the fittest, pack mentality. You know what I'm saying? Certainly, there's been a lot of advancement in off ice preparation from a physical standpoint, dietary, sleep, these type of things, right? But I do see, and if you're looking at it from, so who are actually doing a lot of this are going to be, of course, the pro teams, right? The pro teams have people on staff in your side, but maybe the pro player isn't necessarily the one who needs it the most, or I would say the junior player needs it in a different way, perhaps than the pro is. So let's go into this segment. So my keywords that I wrote down here. So you have a book, Umbilical, which talks about being self-centered. When I so, I've often been accused of being self-centered, not necessarily in a positive way. So
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
self-centered normally is not necessarily a compliment, but
Right.
what does it mean for you when you're talking about being self-centered when we're talking about a hockey player?
So what I the way I explain this to the guys and to my clients is that there's a difference between being selfish and being self-centered. When you're self-centered, you're holding yourself as your priority. So you're running your whole ecosystem in a way that works, that you are sustaining yourself and that you are projecting yourself in a way where you are gaining momentum and that trajectory is landing on the targets that you want to reach. And so you are in leadership of your own system that is producing the results that you want to achieve. Selfish is when we are empty on the inside and we are running in deficiency and we are not addressing the things that make us who we are, or we aren't collecting resources, we aren't collecting education, we're trying to fix stuff. But what happens is that when our internal system runs too low for too long, we start stealing. And so we will steal. That's the selfish part. I'm going to steal from you validation, or I'm going to manipulate you into making me feel better about myself, or I'm going to complain and I'm going to talk to my advisor and I'm going to get my advisor to tell my coach that I'm not getting enough ice time because I'm not doing what it takes in order to produce myself worthy of the ice time. I'm now panicking because I'm empty and now all my dreams are going to be shattered. And so I have to move outside and start manipulating the system to give me the results I want instead of creating an internal system that produces the results. Does that make sense?
Yep. So here's what comes to my mind. So I've coached for 10 years here youth hockey, but you know the problem. So we've always talked about this thing about some parents and some players are delusional,
Yeah.
right? And we say
Well, you
that.
kind of have to be to play hockey.
Well, but I'm saying this from a standpoint of how many of us and at any level we are. And we've had this conversation. We did a couple episodes with Urban Umarik. If we look for those who are interested, look back. I don't know the actual episode, but we talked about the importance of being in the right spot as a player, right? We've spent a lot of time about that. Do you really want to go? Do you really want to go and play for that team where you're going to be a healthy scratch, right? Everybody always wants to be on the best team, and everybody always want to propel themselves forward. But how important it is to be in the right spot, kind of the Jim Collins, getting the right people on the bus, and what we're talking about here is getting the right people in the right seats. But what come to my mind is really the misalignment mentally of where am I in my journey? And a lot of people, players and parents, and when they look at their self-image, no, let me skip to that a little bit later, but when they look at themselves in the mirror as a performer of, let's just say, how good they are. They think that they're better often. They think that they're better than they are. So therefore, when they don't get ice time, or when they didn't, or when they got cut, they have a big problem with that. Right? I played 20 games and I'm dash 20, or I've got 0 points, and they're like, I deserve to be on the PP. That's what I'm saying, being delusional. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So if we switch then to the, so being self-centered, right? Tell me if I'm in the right, having a healthy and a realistic view of yourself, of who you actually are, right? So my next word that I wrote in here, I wrote several, and we'll talk about these. Self-image, self-esteem, self-confidence, and maybe self-identity. Talk about how those things falls into what we just talked about with self-centeredness.
Yeah, I think especially at this age, but I want to say it's at any age. Any time that we are going through a process in our life and then we hit the next level. And it could be a level down, it could be a level up, it could be like there's a huge life event and we have to pivot, like something happens. So then what we were doing before was working somewhat, even if it was only working for our survival, but how we implement that moving forward has to change. And that change process is really terrifying for all of us because who we were is what's kept us alive. So our whole ecosystem is like, okay, this is working. At least we're on the right side of the grass. Like this is good. But in order to get to that next level, so in the positive psychology of it, where we're like moving up in our progress. We're leveling up. We've gone from high school hockey to junior. We made it. And then we hit this glass ceiling that says, you're a rookie, sure. But who you were can't play here.
Yeah.
And the reason why you tried out is because who you were was great. And so that shift in mindset is, okay, but like, I've got a great shot. Well, all the goalies are better. So maybe you don't have a great shot. You have a great shot for where you came from, but you don't necessarily have a great shot today where you're at. But what you do know is how to learn how to go from zero to great, because you've already done that in your past phase or your past section of your process. So adjusting into that, how do I take who I was and have that self-centered where it's like, oh, I'm leveling up and yep. trusting myself. I know how to adjust to the refinement process here on how to grind up instead of fall apart, because my esteem is dependent on my performance as this great high school dude, or, you know, whether like I've lost a job or I've got a promotion, like I was really great in accounting and now I'm in marketing and I don't know how to transfer my skills. Like, how do you go through that? I've just lost a husband to a car accident. Like, those are big things. Who I was can't come forward the way I want it to. And making that adjustment is really hard.
So I want to move forward into kind of applied.
Yeah.
But before that, you know, what came on my mind too is kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is you got food, shelter at the bottom, and then you got and I'm wondering to get your thoughts on, you know, because the self-esteem and these type of things are kind of high up in that needs part. But how important the feeling of safety, comfort, I can't remember what else goes into like this, which is really, really basic. And do you find, so in now dealing with hockey players, when they're moving away from home and now they're billeting, maybe for the first time,
mm-hmm.
or they're dealing with new relationships, new coaches. Notre Dame's had stability in their coaching staff, but not every junior team has stability. And, you know, my original coach got fired mid-season, so now this, or there may be other things that they're talking about, you know, that basic levels of safety that yeah. is so important. How do you see that? Do you see that being expressed when you're meeting with a team of 30 kids or 25, maybe?
I think the safety is really hard to evaluate at this level because, I mean, of course there's basic safety, but then the social safety is not really available.
Yeah.
And I think that is what that is the most underestimated element to sport across the board. Because if you break down, say, so let's just take hockey for example. there's violent social negotiations on the ice.
Yes. So,
and everybody's in for it. And so we're gathering as a team and we're combating another team that has combated or that has gathered. And so this is war, right? Like this is a very small snippet of the world social order, right? We're going to battle. And so we're striving for victory. And so we have to take that little step back. We're in a, or the bigger step is it's a league. Then we get onto the ice. Then we get onto the benches. Whose shift is that? And did you pass that right? And then we go into the dressing room where we've got healthy scratches. We've got injured. We've got coaches. We've got support staff. We've got personal training, all that stuff. And then, so you get smaller and smaller and smaller, and it's this social order of combat. And so providing safety in that, I think ever since hockey began, is the lowest priority. Like we don't need to create
It's
social.
not, it's definitely not been part of the strategy
Right.
of being mindful of that being an important factor
Right.
from
Right.
a coaching staff
Right.
particular.
To parents, to the league itself, like even, selling tickets, like who has the best entertainment value points and fights for that league and that associate or that corporation to get the tickets, to like all of those things, to break it down into that human has to be able to show up in the social order with their own safety, because they're it's not safe. It's not a safe environment.
So
Coaching.
let's talk about the application or the applied side of this, because there is a delta between, and there's an opportunity delta in not doing anything, right? Or strategically, proactively, deliberately incorporating these things into a curriculum, which is what you guys do. Talk about, not necessarily, I don't want you to give away the secret sauce here, but talk about how you structurally, I mean, because you're part of the staff, right? Are you meeting every day, every week, every month? Are you in person? Are you virtual? Is it a group? Is it one-on-one? Are you only dealing with players? Or are you dealing with coaches? How does it typically work? Tell me what you can and cannot say.
So we impl so my role on the team is to oversee the support for coaches, players, and the program. So the program itself, I have my eye on watching to see if we have social order that's going a little tilted, or if we have, some things that we need to implement in order for this unique group. Every year is different, right? And every team is different. So what does the program need to enhance the performance of that group? And then each player individually, are they capable of showing up for that week or that month or the season in the role, or are we changing the rules? Are they battling injuries? And then with the coaches also, having that space to debrief and to check and double check, because the way that we see each other in combat isn't necessarily the way we see each other as human beings. And so being able to differentiate, I think all coaches struggle with coming off the field and then coming into that humanity side and trying to blend. I want to develop the human, but I also want to develop the warrior on the field, right? And so there's so many things that the coaches are like, so many balls that they're trying to juggle, that my role can come in and help them process how to have better communication with the team as a whole or with the individuals, because I have inside connection with the players and I can oversee the program.
And so you're in a resource role to the players, to the and to, I would imagine, to the GM and the head coach. So in your case, so you have Brett, who is the GM and head coach, right? He is the quarterback of the hockey program there at Notre Dame. And I would imagine that that's got to be relieving that he doesn't, I mean, if you weren't there, he would have to shoulder that in some form or fashion, right? And he may be awesome to be able to do that. And most, I would imagine that most programs, it's on the head coach, general manager to do that. But in this case, he could take a higher view of it and then be able to, how does it work Because I know that you're having a constant cadence of meetings, but is he seeing, or is it going back and forth where he may see, hey, player, you may want to go see Co so how did they so did they say, hey, you need to go see Corey,
Yeah.
or did they say, how does that happen?
Yeah. A lot of players, there's this. So what's really good with me is that I'm a filtering system also. So and I'm kind of an offshoot. So because I don't know a lot about hockey, and I'm happy to not, I know enough, but to enjoy the game, but that's about it. But they can come to me and I have no effect on ice time. And so
Yeah.
we can have a different kind of conversation than when they're trying to get ice time from their coach. So when they go to the coach, there's always that ulterior motive of, if I show you that I'm interested, or tell me what to do so that I can get on the ice. Well, there's a kickback of that is not productive, because who's running the team then, right? Like, are you showing up to learn, or are you showing up to manage up,
So,
right?
that delineation or that line in the sand is a healthy one to be able to say,
Yes.
this is the safe space, has nothing to do with this,
Yes.
but
Yeah.
our objective. So what are your goals and objective for the player and for the team?
Yeah, so what we'll do is, so just to go back, like Brett will say, or any coach can say to the life coach, are you struggling with this? And they'll have their own conversation about hockey, but when he can pick up that it's like, you're not listening, or I'm trying to teach you, or you're coming in with ulterior motives, or you don't like, you're not hearing that I think you're great, or whatever the issue is, then they can come to that life coach and learn how to process the feedback in a way that it's productive, instead of just sort of flailing around trying to make sense of the puzzle pieces. So
Yeah.
then to go back to us filtering that through, they can offshoot to me and then have that one-on-one conversation with me, and it can have nothing to do with hockey. They can be worried about school choices, they can be worried about a side business, they can be worried about relationships, they can be worried about pressure from family, or even if it's, I think the coach hates me, or he used to like me and I don't know what's happening,
I
like
hate my
what.
billet. I hate my billet, or I hate my roommate.
Yeah, exactly. And or we've got some toxicity happening in the dressing room that, then I can go to Brett, like to the head coaches, and say, like the head coach and our support staff, and say, hey, I think we have an issue here as a whole, instead of this kid's a problem or this kid's a problem. Then it takes that target off of, like, the kid doesn't feel like he's targeted, and then the coaches don't feel like they're targeted. So it adds that really nice filter in between to create healthy conversation. So then I can say, okay, well, when you go and talk to the coach about this, fine tune it this way. Don't go this way trying to get ice time. Fine tune it over here so that you're actually learning how to be a better player. Let me know what they say.
Explain to, we talked about this just last week in a previous episode with Ryan Hay, who's coming out, and we had this conversation about the difference between coming out of U18, meaning youth hockey, into juniors. And he said, he's only been, 4 weeks in, and he said the biggest difference is the coaches are running the team, the captains are running the locker room, right? Which can be awesome, and it could be problematic, right? But isn't that kind of the common denominator, and as higher up as you go? But that's a big difference between youth hockey, or in Canada they call it minor hockey, but right? But how does that, when I say that, how does that come, what comes to your mind in terms of, you may need to be dealing with talk about the captains or alternate captains within a hockey team and the leadership within that team contra coaching staff.
Well, you know, it can get Lord of the Flies pretty quick.
Talk about pack mentality,
Right.
and I mean there's dangers in that, right?
Huge dangers, huge dangers. And the greatest danger is that when these kids come out of this institutionalized state of performing as students, as athletes, as good boys in the family, whatever it is that they've been programmed to produce results that make their higher ups happy. Now they go flying into adulthood and the demands are still there, but the support isn't. And you're supposed to have figured it out by now. And all the rules have changed. And so the only person that really can understand is the captain. Well, where did the captain come from? How are they qualified? Who decided that? The alternate captains, who decided that? And then you have the vets. Well, who decided that they should be running the show? Because sometimes the rookies are more socially intelligent than the vets, and the vets are only going to produce what worked for them. So we're still rolling the snowball down the hill that isn't producing humans. It's producing this assembly line of athletes, and it doesn't work. Like, our percentage of guys that make it all the way to the top is very low. And as like I was thinking about this the other day, it would be an interesting analysis to see the actual game of when NHL started or when hockey started to what level would be comparable to the guys now. Like, would professional hockey in the 70s equal U18? It certainly wouldn't equal professional hockey now. Like, the game has changed so much. Well, we're trying to get these young adults to try and figure it out, and they just don't have the support, and their support doesn't have training on how to support.
And what you're providing then in a systematic way is for the individual, for the captains, for the coaching staff, and for the team. And for the organization, a way to process the talk about that a little bit on how does that do you go through and there's got to be an element of education in there. There's got to be a huge element of trust and relationship that you build over time. And I would imagine in the beginning, it's more about getting to know, and then you can peel the onion a little bit, and then talk about, all right, what are the end results of how will this translate into what are we trying to get out of this, right?
Well, my success meter is very different from from probably everybody else's. And I'm quite happy with that, because somebody has to keep their eye on that other metric that's going on. And I love that I'm chosen to do that. But and I'm sure the guys would tell you that my courses are far from easy. So what we do is we meet individually, and we also meet in group, which is a class. And so I'm teaching them things that are not easy to understand. They're complicated, they're complex, very philosophical, and I'm breaking down what they think is holding them together from the previous institutionalization of their progress. And I'm breaking it down. They can reclaim it the way they want to because it worked, but now it transfers that ownership. This isn't just how hockey has taught me how to do things. This is what works for me. So our univ like I tell them, I'm like, this is, you guys are getting ready for university. This is university level stuff. And
Yep.
so we're gonna go into it, and you're gonna have to lean in. You're gonna have to have coffee before you get here. But they aren't used to it because it's like high school environment. You kind of sit in the back of the class, you're the jock, you're the, you try and get the test right, ACDC on the multiple choice exams. But now it's like, okay, I have to really implement this as a development of my career, which is hockey. And so I'm getting educated, I'm getting trained. This part isn't just about my feelings or about how I handle pressure. This is the development of the psychology and the philosophies behind group sport and high competitive athletes. So which is again different from the, so going back to what we were talking about at the very beginning, it's different from the that band of sports psychology, which is very common. But to have a coach come in, and I'm, and like, to have a coach come in on the ground level again, and because, so say I don't know much about hockey, they have to tell me about their hockey. So they teach me hockey. So that's a therapeutic process all in of itself. So they have to own this whole process of who am I? What am I good at? What am I not good at? What do I have to train? How do I get the resources to train that? But also, where does my self-esteem come from? Where does my confidence come from? Do I have any? Do I want any? Should I have any? What does that look like? How do you know if you have it? How do you know if you need it? So all of those things is our is what we do in our class, which is really challenging, very challenging for the guys. But I'm pushing them to move their minds out of yes sir, no sir institution into how are you going to show up as a man in your sport, in your career, in your community, in your relationships, in the bonds that you're building. How are you in the dreams that you are trying to accomplish? How are you implementing the best of you for the best of you from your center self, right? So then you're producing a human that happens to be phenomenal at athletics instead of trying to factory produce athletes and hope that they find some humanity along the way.
Well, I would love, I mean, I know we can't do this, but what I would love to be able to do is peel the onion the other layer, but that would really go into the secret sauce, which would be, so this is the cliffhanger that if you want to know more about them, then they're going to have to contact you directly and so on, which you're available to do. But I think it'd be really cool to be able to look at the common, you're talking about the Lord of the Flies, but there's really within a hockey team, you have very common personality traits, you have common issues, you have common opportunities, and how do you deal with that? How do you build? How do you over? I've been fascinated by watching some of these. All or nothing or something, it was on Netflix where you follow a team throughout a season, right? And the ability to follow an individual from first day at Notre Dame and then to the end.
Oh, it's so fun.
And you get to sit front row in that movie and also play with the joysticks and buttons. And I would imagine, I mean, this is at the infancy with you guys and your program 2.0 and 3.0 can only improve. And you're going to make mistakes and you're going to pivot and you're going to you're going to build this into it. And I just applaud you guys, really.
Oh, thank
It's a
you.
real, it's about thinking differently. And it's
Yes.
about, to me, it says a lot about the organization that says, hey, it didn't blow up. Now we need this quick fix, but sees this as an opportunity,
Preventative, yeah.
and not just preventatively, but really strategically to say, how do I
Yes.
get an edge?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
So, what's the best way to contact you? And then we're going to go in the last segment here in the podcast. What's the best way to contact you? I know you mentioned LinkedIn, but you're not big on LinkedIn. So what's the best way
Yeah.
to reach you?
My website is great. My website has all the information that is needed to contact me. I'm developing programs that are going to be great for high performance groups and high performance athletes, but high performance people in general. So whether or not you're raising a family, whether you're grinding through mental struggles or emotional struggles, or you are, redoing a business or whatever, there's those programs that are coming. But I also have, workshops and special speaking events and one-on-one sessions available across the board. So my website has all that information.
And then they can find you on Instagram. You got some
Yeah, I'm on
be a
Instagram too.
photographer, so you got some
Yeah.
nice pictures on there. Corey H. Syke,
Yeah, Sitch.
S-Y Sitch. Okay,
Yeah.
sorry,
That's okay.
I
We
butchered.
get that
So
a
last thing,
Yeah.
two segments that we have here on Universal for a long time is number one is what advice would you give yourself? You're not a hockey player, but what advice would you give yourself if you met yourself at 17? Not
Oh,
17
man.
anymore, but things you didn't know then that you wish you would have known now, or that things you know now that you didn't know back then. Coach for yourself today.
Yeah. Good question. I've actually thought about this a lot, and I think one thing that I would like to share with anybody, like any athlete or any student that's listening, is don't give your A away. So for me, high school was hard. I didn't, not intellectually, I didn't like the institution of it, which is so, I mean, of course, satisfying that I get to deprogram these guys and move them into adulthood. But the institution didn't work for me, and it didn't consider me, and I was too smart and too stubborn, and I would so I would boycott the system, but what happened is that I would lose an A. So then I would lose my opportunities because I needed to make a point. Do I stand behind that? Well, yeah, of course. But in hindsight, so many, like working with these guys now and with my clients, it's so acceptable to be less, or it's so acceptable to give that thing away instead of really leaning in and learning what is making me angry, what's frustrating me, what's hard, how do I go into the greatness that I'm allowed to have? Because sometimes that resistance is, if I make it, the pressure's going to be higher. If I, maybe I won't ever have friends. Maybe I can't ever have a chocolate bar again. Like, you think of all these things, right? And
Connor Bedard, no faster
yeah.
ever.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, like you're allowed to have the greatness that you're shooting for. So it's okay if you leave that world of what was behind. Go for it. It's right there. There's a way to get there, and there's so many people that can't wait to help you get there. Like you can get there.
Yeah, you can win the battle and the war.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what comes to my mind. All right, last thing, we have a partnership with TargetAid.com. great organization that is having huge success in Sweden, kind of as a fundraising platform, but more content-wise. You know, so every member of every guest on this podcast get to say the team of your heart. So in your case, since you're not necessarily an Elite Prospects participant, but
Right.
if I was going to ask you in sports, what's the team closest to your heart?
Oh.
I got two things in my pocket that I think would be possible for you, but
Well, I have, yeah, I kind of have three.
okay.
Notre Dame, of course, and then
That was one I had.
yeah. And then my son is playing for Mercyhurst down
Mercyhurst, I was
in,
gonna say that's number two.
yeah. And then the third one would probably be Trinity Western in BC because my daughter played volleyball there.
Okay.
And she also played for Portland. So yeah, I've got a few teams that are my favorite, but I watch the player. I don't watch the team.
All right, if you have to pick one, because we're going to have to put one
Oh.
on our site here, which one are you going to pick?
Well, I'd have to go with Notre Dame.
All right, let's do that. That's great. I thought about, I was going to say the third one probably going to be Jared's youth hockey team or something where he started playing minor hockey or something. But great. Hey, it's been awesome to talk about a
So
little
fun.
difference part of coaching,
Yeah.
but we want to educate and inform. That's our main motive on this
Yeah.
podcast. Not
Yeah.
necessarily so much about Swedish juniors,
Yeah.
but for Swedish junior teams, you know, if you think that this is not something that Swedish junior players sh shouldn't be talking about, you're wrong. You
Yeah.
should be.
Yeah.
And take the this is we didn't talk about this, but to wrap it up, take the World Junior Finals between the U.S. and Sweden, and to me, that's the difference. It's not the skill level. It is US beat Sweden mentally, and they were prepared. And I would bet a lot of money that this type of stuff is built into the NTDP, which is what produces results
Yeah.
on the ice and off the ice.
Yeah.
And it's impressive. And if Swedish junior teams or the Swedish Hockey Federation want to take it to another level and not just win the group rounds and going far into the quarterfinals, semifinals, and the finals, if you want to win that gold medal, you better win in this game. So,
Yes. Yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on. It's been fun, and we'll stay in touch as we go forward here into the silly season of
Thank you so much, Jacob. This was a lot of fun.